Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri. Normally, I interview military veterans about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. You have arrived at one of our Saturday episodes, which is called Behind Beyond the Uniform. The format is very casual. I call it a mullet format, business up front, party in the back. So I've got an announcement. I've got a couple professional items related to an interview I just completed today that won't air until the end of August. So we'll talk through that. And then just some random musings on the personal front and about relationships at the end. And feel free to stick around for as much or a little of that as serves you. And I'll be back on Monday and Thursday every single week with new episodes. We've got a fantastic lineup for August. So let's get started. The first one is just an announcement. We did a survey a while back. People were interested in some Beyond the Uniform swag. And so I'm happy to announce that that's on our website, beyondtheuniform.org/swag. We have two different types of hats with embroidered logos. We've got two different types of t-shirts. We've got men's and a woman's polo and stickers. We are sticking to our pledge, which is we don't want to make money off of the military community or off of veterans. So those are done at cost, meaning whatever we paid for production, we just pass it on to you. We don't charge anything extra. And then we have an option where you can specify that you're either a non-military member, non-veteran, or you just want to donate. And I think we inflate the price by $5 or $6 to help with the production cost of the show. So check that out. We have the first set of swag en route to the Beyond the Uniform team. So I can't speak directly about it yet, but I've used this vendor before and like him and think it's going to be awesome. So check that out. I'm excited because I did an interview today with a lady named Yolanda Clark. She served in the Air Force. She served in the Army, enlisted in the Army as a medic. And she is now a partner to a Marine Corps person. She started a company, which is why I was talking to her. And even if you're not interested in entrepreneurship, I think it's a really fantastic episode just because the way that her brain works is pretty awesome. I just thought she had such good explanations around things. So I've got my notes pulled up from that. This is a little bit of a smattering of things because, it was just kind of jotted down quickly during the call. But basically, she runs a company called Powder River Industries. She worked at Lockheed Martin for, over 10 years and then started this company. And she talked about how 23% of government contracts need to go to small businesses owned by veterans, which is now what she is doing. And she is building this company, going after portions of these billion-dollar companies. And I love that she really, first of all, the way that she arrived at entrepreneurship is really flying against the convention of what I hear about a lot. You know, Nike, just do it. Just dive in. Just start the company. Just pull the trigger. And she was very methodical about it. She had a business plan for years. She continuously refined it. She continuously figured out what did she not know and needed to learn. As a military spouse who's in the reserves, she moves around a lot. So everywhere she went, she would get plugged into the small business community. She would learn. She would find mentors. And so as a result, she has some of the best advice I've ever heard about networking. She, like myself, is an introvert, and she talks about how before going to an event, she doesn't go to a lot of events. When she goes to an event, she researches in advance. She knows who she wants to talk to. And this is the part I hadn't heard before. She will pay attention when she's there and see who the person she wants to talk to is talking to. And she said she always writes down on just a tiny note card. She writes a tiny handwritten note, just a few sentences explaining, you know, why she wants to talk to them. And what she gave an example where she saw someone she wanted to talk to. This person was just overwhelmed talking to different people. But she noticed one of the people that this guy was talking to, and she went up to him and started up a conversation and realized he was a friend of the guy, just there visiting and thought he'd check it out. And she, you know, had done her homework. So she said, oh, I'm such a big fan of your friend. I read his article on this. I read his article on that. And they would get a rapport going. And then at the end, she'd say, like, look, I'm not going to be able to get through this crowd to talk to him, but would you mind giving him this note? And she's had a really high success rate because how many people have a note? And, you know, it's going through a personal connection. And I thought that was a very clever, concrete example around networking, which can be a nebulous term. I also love that she talked about growing where you're planted. And when she first started her company, she was flying around all of the time meeting with people. And you know, she at the time she had a one-year-old, her husband was in the Marines. She realized there's no way she could maintain this. So she took a different approach. Rather than going after the people that everyone was going after, she said, okay, right now I'm in San Diego. Who is in San Diego that I could talk to? Who are the people here to meet? And that led to what she said, I wrote down, going to unpredictable places, places where no one else is. And that's a way to differentiate. If you're trying something in a different area, in a different approach, it's a way to differentiate yourself, your business, all of those things. I also love, you know, she was at Lockheed Martin, imagine making pretty good money. Her husband's in the Marines, making decent money. And she knew she wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so she, while they were stationed in Hawaii, one of the most expensive places in the world, they decided to live off of just one of their income. And they lived off her husband's income, which allowed her to put all of her money into savings, which, as you can imagine, running a company takes a lot of money. She talks about how it took her 2 years to make it to a point where she could have paid herself a minimal salary, but she actually waited 3 years to do that because for that intervening year, she paid that extra money to grow the business, which is really smart. And then she talked about not being so fixated on your plans that you miss things. So she's a big planner. She has some really good tactical advice around planning, but she said she views it as sniper positions. So she says she'll run to one position, and if the target doesn't come across it from that vantage point, then she'll move to the next sniper position. I thought that was a cool analogy. And then one more thing is we talked about numbers and the number of contracts that she applied to. And so she talked about applying to 10 contracts, government contracts, per month, which is a lot. It takes quite a lot of time to do even one contract. So doing 10 a month is a lot. And she did 17 in 1 month. And overall, she had submitted 175 different contracts before she won her first deal. And why I love that is I think that most of us underestimate what it takes. I'm imagining if I had asked you prior to saying that number, you'd probably think, you know, maybe 5 or 10, and then you get one, maybe 20. But 175 is probably an order of magnitude higher than you would have expected. And what I love even more about her approach is she said that they are required to provide a debrief when asked, which means that if I apply to this government contract and I get rejected, they are required, if I reach out to them, to let me know in a debrief of what I'm doing wrong, why I wasn't chosen. And so she talked about, obviously, the emotional hurdle there. Not only have you lost this contract, but now you're going to them and having them tell you explicitly all the reasons why you're a loser, essentially. But in that process, she learned, she iterated, she established personal relationships with these people. So she was no longer just a nameless email applying to this. She was an actual person, a commodity that they knew. So that's just a hint of all these things. I'll leave you with one last quote from this one. But I think it just kind of points to her vantage point, which I think is unique. And I've been doing entrepreneurship for 10 years now, and I was taking notes for myself. I was learning a lot from her. But the last thing that she said that I loved is she said, when you give people a chance to show their genius, they do. When you give people a chance to show you their genius, they do. She said this in the context of meeting with small business associations and in the different towns she's lived and just learning from them and sucking in all that knowledge. And that's one of the things that sets her apart in my mind is her willingness to learn from others and her adeptness at finding great mentors. That's it for business up front. I want to move on to the personal in or a party in the back. And I'm rushing through this because we're traveling the next week. And so I'm trying to get this recorded before we start packing our bags for travel. So a couple things, and again, this is just top of mind. I've got four words on a post-it note, so it might not be the most eloquent, but wanted to speak from the heart about a couple things on my mind. One of them was, and these were all a little bit random and unrelated. One was, I met someone yesterday, and he said something that stuck with me. And the sense I got from him was, we were just talking about art and dabbling in art. I was telling him, I want to take a painting class. I have no artistic ability, but want to take a painting class. And he was talking about just dabbling in music. And he described art as a way of valuing yourself, of valuing your perspective, your voice, what you have to offer. And I love that. I love that sense of using art as a means to just kind of express oneself and then also to value one's unique perspective. There is a book that I love by Elizabeth Gilbert called Big Magic, The Art of Creative Living. And one of the things she says there, and she says it a lot in podcasts that she's on, is that when we're young, no kid is like, oh, I'm not creative. Like, you put a five-year-old in front of some crayons, he doesn't push them back and say, oh, no, I'm not a creative person. Every kid loves to draw and paint and do all of these things. And as she talks about, as we become adults, we let that go. We let that enter into a realm of other people that, they are an artist. They are a musician. They are a writer. All of these things that we're all capable of. And she uses this as kind of a playful invitation for all of us to explore our artistic sides more. And I think that there's a value there. But I love this other side of it, which is valuing yourself, your voice, your own contribution by expressing yourself and experimenting and not having that be expected to be in an art museum, but seeing that there is a value of creating, of that creative process, beyond with how it's received, beyond putting it on Instagram and getting likes, just creating for the sense of creating. Another one, and let me just kind of read this. So I'm reading currently a book called Smile at Fear, Awakening the True Heart of Bravery. It's by a man named, and I'm going to butcher this, but it's Chogyam Trungpa, who is a, from what I understand, a very prominent person in meditation and Buddhism, who's kind of been at the forefront of bringing meditation to the West. And I really like his stuff. This is the second book I'm reading by him. But let me just read a quote from that I thought was really awesome. So he says, when you begin to be honest with yourself, you develop a genuine gut level of truth. That is not necessarily cutting yourself down. Simply discover what is there. Simply see that, and then stop. So first, look at yourself, but don't condemn yourself. It's important to be matter of fact, on the spot. Just look, and when you see the situation in its fullest way, then you begin to be a warrior. And I understand that's like a different sense of warrior than probably a lot of us in the military think of, but it's got me thinking a lot about honesty. And we've talked about this before, about integrity, honesty, alternate views of that. But with this, it's this real courage to look at myself and be honest about myself, both the good and the bad. And what I love and appreciate about what he's saying is coupling that, not compromising on the honesty, but coupling that with, I would say, kindness, gentleness, love, compassion, understanding. It's the honesty without judgment. And I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks now, and it's really hard. It's I got in an argument a couple of weeks ago with my wife, and I was just thinking about that. Like afterwards, I was like, oh man, if I'm really being honest with myself about that situation, I was being an asshole. She said something and I chose to take it personally. She said something that wasn't personal. And because of my own garbage, because of my own, past things in my life, I heard something she wasn't even saying. And it's tough to view yourself like that. At least it is for me. It's tough to view myself as like, oh man, I was really acting as a child in that situation. I view myself, I aspire to be a man of integrity. I aspire to be a leader, a good father, a good husband, all of these things. And it can be tough to, so like, you look at it under a microscope at a specific moment and be like, man, I was falling short there. And I think what's even tougher is to hold that truth and to not go into the place of self-condemnation, flagellation, beating yourself up, shame, all of these things. I think it's very easy. It's like this cliff. It's very easy to go over that cliff. And so what I like in that quote is this sense of being honest, of being really meticulously honest about who you are, where you're strong, where you're not, where you're succeeding, where you're failing, and doing all of that almost with like a scientific approach of being the observer, not so tied up around it. I find that when my ego is wrapped up around something, when my ego is wrapped up around being a great husband and I see moments when I'm not going to be honest about it. I'm going to deny that, or I'm going to get angry. I'm going to do anything to avoid upsetting my worldview in which I am a good husband constantly, which is, it can never be true, right? There's always going to be shortfalls. There's another quote. Let me see if I can reach over to read this. This comes from the men's group that I'm doing. One of the men shared this. It was kind of like precepts of a warrior. And the first one on there is, the warrior is ruthlessly honest with himself while being kind to others. And I love that, right? I think that there's another aspect of that. If we are ruthlessly honest with ourselves, you know, where am I lacking? Where am I succeeding? Where do I need to work on it? I think if you're ruthlessly honest with yourself, the tendency for me is to start to apply that ruthless honesty towards others and start to judge them. They're not doing this. They haven't done this. This is their issue. You start to become the armchair psychologist, evaluating everyone else and what's wrong with them. So I love that coupling in this sense of being ruthlessly honest with myself while being kind to others. Like, they have nothing to do with my own personal work. And so I hope that resonates with some of you, but I just think it's such a difficult practice to, you know, I'll just be vulnerable. The thing I'm still getting my head around how to express, and I would love to do this at some point in a more thought out process, but I think being honest about my military experience, and I think probably more of it from the Naval Academy than the military, but I think it really, I allowed it to affect me in a way where it changed my view towards women. At the Naval Academy, you know, you would have limited time on the weekends, and a sign of success was being able to go out and get girls' phone numbers and hook up and all of these things. And it became this mission, right, where I view myself like I really started to objectify women. It wasn't about seeing people for the unique and wonderful person they were at. Every woman was a potential challenge. Every woman was a potential conquest. And it's tough for me to say that because I don't want to view myself as someone who, for a period of time, was really calloused in the way that I behaved around women, who was really self-centered and not viewing how my actions impacted someone else. That's a tough pill to swallow, right? If I saw someone else doing that, I would be pretty ruthless in judging them. I would write them off as an asshole. I would write them off as just, you know, someone who I don't look up to. And so that's an area of applying this honesty as well, as being like, okay, can I look at myself during that period of my life and be honest and say, look, there's a lot of things I did that I'm not proud of. There's a lot of jokes that I told that I would cringe at today. There was a lot of jokes that I laughed at that I would just view as so wildly inappropriate. There's a lot of things that I said to women that I regret, a lot of ways that I treated to them and reacted to them and approached them that I just have a lot of shame around. And that's where I think the other aspect of this comes in, which is like, okay, can I be honest? Can I be unrelentingly and ruthlessly honest about who I was at that period in my life? And can I do it with a sense of kindness, with a sense of compassion? And I view it as like kind of two hands outstretched. Like, there's this desire to do one or the other. Either it's the honesty and I condemn myself and flagellate myself, or I'm compassionate and just ignore it. I just pretend it didn't happen, or I just brush it under a rug. But I think the skill or the difficulty in this, and the thing I'm working on, is like, can I hold those both equally? And I think you could apply that to a million different areas of your life, but those were just kind of two examples I wanted to share. One last one, this is kind of a twofer. I'm doing a Udemy course. It's a friend of mine. This guy actually directed a documentary that's on Netflix that's called Queens and Cowboys. It's really well done. So he's been successful as a director, and he did a one-hour course on Udemy about storytelling. And I bring it up for two reasons. First of all, Udemy and things like that are great ways to learn. It's a reminder for me, I don't take advantage of these often, to learn from experts, to constantly be learning and growing in some area. So that's one shout out. It's Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y. There's a bunch of them though. Masterclass is one I wanna check out too. But he talks about this as kind of like tension is one of the central, one of the most important parts of storytelling. He talks about in TV where, you know, you've always seen that scene where the person on TV opens the door and is shocked, and then they cut to commercial. And the implied tension is, oh man, who was it? Who was there? And then they come back from commercial and they go to a different plot line before revealing who it is. And that tension is really what drives engagement. And I thought of this, you know, through a different lens around, if you've listened to previous Saturday episodes, I've talked about discomfort. I've talked about how I can numb myself to discomfort. I don't feel comfortable. I feel discomfort in my life because something is off, and I can drink, smoke, self-medicate, watch TV, look at my phone, million different ways to distract myself. Social media is a great one, right? We can either be present with that discomfort and have the courage to face it and understand where it's coming from and potentially get out of bad situations sooner because the discomfort becomes so intolerable that we have to take action. We have to leave a job. We have to leave a relationship. We have to move physically. We have to accept something about ourselves. We need to come to grips with something. There's all these reasons why we might be experiencing this discomfort. And so I thought of that around this tension, right? He talks about tension, like one of the things, I didn't actually realize this, and I forget the term for it, but let's say with Gmail, when I refresh my inbox and there's that load time, that is consciously put there by developers to increase the tension, to increase my eagerness to receive. It's actually used in a lot of different software tools where they could very easily get rid of that, but by keeping that there, it builds up anticipation, which increases the stickiness. And so it's just interesting to see and understand all the ways where I'm manipulated through tension. That by creating this tension, I keep watching the television show longer. I use my email more often. I check social media more frequently. I'm literally being played here. And it just made me think of a different view on discomfort of if I'm more comfortable with discomfort, if I'm more willing to sit with discomfort, I can get past some of these common pitfalls, some of these things that are built into my world to distract me. I think of this in negotiations. If you think back to the Maggie Neal episode, if you listen to that recent one, and I've heard it said, you know, oftentimes in a negotiation, the first person to speak is the person who loses. You know, if someone throws out a number, hey, this is what I'm looking for, you know, it can be uncomfortable to sit there and wait for the response. And you might dive in. I literally had this happen today. We were getting some air conditioning work done, and the guy quoted my wife the price, and she waited, and he, like, literally within seconds dropped the price. He's like, well, I can actually do this. And it's like, okay, he wasn't comfortable with the discomfort. There was too much discomfort in the silence that he literally lost money on it. And so I just wanted to throw that out as an alternate viewpoint of this thought of tension. I think it kind of relates to what we've been discussing around discomfort. That is all for this week. Check out the swag portion of the website. Keep the feedback coming, and I'll be back on Monday and Thursday with our traditional interview format. Take care.